Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of What the Hal. And we're going to start off with something you may recognize, and you tell me if you do. Here we go. Ready? You're right. That's Tarzan's yell. How'd you know that? And you know, there's a community in Southern California, in Los Angeles, in the San Fernando Valley, that is named after Tarzan. It's Tarzana. And that's what we're going to talk about this week. In Tarzana is the Tarzana Community Cultural Center on Ventura Boulevard. It's a museum that honors Tarzan's creator, Edgar Rice Burroughs. And there, we caught up with Helen Baker, who founded the center almost 20 years ago.
I saw an article saying that this property, which was then owned by Public Storage, was for sale. They were having a little trouble because there were a lot of improved street improvements and so on to be done. And I just got interested.
You said, I want it.
I wanted it to happen for the community.
Okay, but what it really focuses when you come down here is things about the jungle hero, Tarzan.
Exactly.
And so this is really kind of almost a monument or a tribute to what? To Tarzan, to Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Edgar Rice Burroughs and his jungle character, who's much better known than Edgar Rice Burroughs. This guy, Elbow Legged, was the first Tarzan in the silent movies.
The silent movies. I don't exactly remember the silent movies.
I know.
But I have seen that. Uh-huh. And then you have, well, there's so many of these people that played Tarzan. Who's that?
You know what? I'm embarrassed to say. I don't know all
of them.
Oh,
he stumped you.
I just didn't meet all of them way back then.
Way back then? I used to watch Johnny Weissmuller, and I remember Les Barker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember a lot of these guys. And you know what's interesting about this? If I'm not mistaken, and tell me if I'm wrong, the book came before the comic book?
Yes, you're right.
And the comic books you've got all down here. And it looks to me like, wow, you got like several dozen comic books. So they were made for a while.
Yes, they have been. I think maybe since the 50s or 60s.
How is it that Tarzan and Edgar Rice Burroughs connect to this community of Tarzana?
Edgar Rice Burroughs always envisioned being a gentleman farmer. He moved from the Chicago area, having written some of these books, but when the first one, Tarzan of the Apes, finally sold for a very low price, he achieved his dream of moving his family out to this area because they were starting to talk about movie rights.
And I heard when he came out here, he liked the weather.
He loved the weather, he did.
And so he started talking about movie rights. He had written this book called Tarzan.
Of the Apes.
Of the Apes.
Yes.
But by the way, did you ever hear why he wrote about Tarzan?
He had quite an imagination. He loved the idea of the jungle and Africa. Even though most of his books took place in Africa, he never visited Africa.
And to show you how much I know about Tarzan, it's Lord Greystoke.
Absolutely right. You know your history.
And what? Tell me about Lord Greystoke.
Well, he was actually Tarzan.
He was a child of noble people.
Absolutely.
They went to Africa.
And shipwrecked, marooned, and he was left alone, raised by a mother ape, and grew up, somehow taught himself to read and write, and eventually found out who he was, but not after a long history of living in the jungle and being very creative and, according to all these novels, had a very interesting life in
the
jungle.
I think that as I remember back to my childhood, I remember the phrase, me Tarzan, you Jane.
Well, Edgar Rice Burroughs, the author, did not like that at all. Because his character was noble, educated, and did not speak that way. But the movies changed it a little bit.
And how is it that Tarzana grew? What was it about Edgar Rice Burroughs and this community?
He wanted to buy a small farm in California because he loved the weather. And he found a rather large gentleman's ranch, which was Harold Gray Otis, is the editor, founder of the LA Times. And he bought it, moved his family out here, added to the livestock that were already on the farm, added to the Angora goat population, and became a gentleman farmer. Didn't make a lot of money with that, but he continued to write his books, and he continued to become better known, or at least his character, Tarzan, did.
Where did the seeds of Tarzana actually grow?
Edgar Rice Burroughs named his farm Tarzana after the character he had created.
And so that's where Tarzan. The name comes from.
Yes. We don't know where the name Tarzan came from. I think it had a meaning maybe in an African language.
Let's look up here for a minute. We talked about the comic books already down below, but I wondered if we could just kind of take a peek in the closet here, and perhaps you could tell us a little bit about what we're looking at.
He's written books translated into about 47 different languages, and some of the books have been adapted for children. As you see, these obviously look like children's books here.
Tarzan and the City of Diamonds, Tarzan and the Fire Gods, Tarzan and the Desert Rescue.
Yes. Interestingly, there are tigers in some of his books. There were no tigers in Africa. That was pointed out to Edgar Rice Burroughs, and he did correct that later. But he wrote books which have been, after Tarzan of the Apes, he continued to write about his Tarzan character. And I'm not sure how many books, I can't remember how many Tarzan books there are, but he also wrote books about, he wrote a lot of modern books. He was considered the father of modern day science fiction.
I wanted to look up here because look at some of these. The Land That Time Forgot, At the Earth's Core. These aren't necessarily Tarzan books right here.
No, they're not. They're science fiction. He was considered the father of modern science fiction.
And so now we come back to this case, and we're in Tarzana, home of Tarzan. Feel pretty good to say that?
It really does, because most of the, quote, bedroom communities, of which we are one in the San Fernando Valley, just have a sort of a generic sounding name like Woodland Hills, or not putting them down, but they don't, people all over the world don't know what they are.
But everybody knows Tarzan.
They do. So we get calls from all over the world. People want to come see what we've got here. Our little building is rather small, so there's not a lot to make a trip cross country to see, but people love to do it.
The Cultural Center is just a beautiful area. Not too far from there, we headed to the Little Cafe, one of the oldest restaurants in the community, and we spoke to some locals on issues they face in Tarzana.
We pretty much have the same issues that everyone else has nowadays with homelessness and traffic and congestion and security issues.
Let's talk about the homelessness. How big has that gotten?
Just look at every freeway entrance and exit. It's like all around you. You can just you see it wherever you go. Go to any shopping center, grocery store. You see it everywhere, you know.
Do you talk to your councilman about that?
Yeah.
What do they tell you?
They're working on it.
They're working on it. Are they working on it fast enough for your liking?
No.
What would you like to see done?
More housing for them and more shelters. And
The city is trying to do that.
Right. Well, it's too little, you know, it's not happening fast enough. And I guess the cost of living is too high. A lot of people are working homeless, too. There are a lot of people that just can't, you know, afford the high rents.
Is there a quality of life here that keeps you here?
Well, my family and my friends are here, and I've been here, you know, I'm a native Californian, so, yeah.
But I'm talking about Tarzana.
You get used to a place that you've been in for a long time, and you have that, you know, sense of comfort and, you know, complacency. And why would you want to, you wouldn't want to leave it to go somewhere else. It's, you know.
So it hasn't gotten so bad that you can't stand it.
No, it's like everywhere else. I mean, where is there utopia? And, you know, you deal with your circumstances and you make the best of it. You know, there's issues everywhere you go.
I've lived here for 20 years. My husband's lived here for 40, so he's seen more changes, but...
You like it?
I love it.
What do you love about it?
I have a piece of heaven here on earth.
So what do you want to see the public officials do to try to change this?
It would be nice to see homeless housing get put into effect.
But they're working on that.
Well, they need more local things. So look at if there's abandoned business centers or malls that can be made into homeless apartment stores. It just, there's too much stuff that doesn't get used properly. So I think we need to have more voice in city council with ideas and how our dollars are getting spent.
Have you thought about running for mayor?
Oh.
Sounds like you have a platform.
I do, but no. But it would be nice to see it happening.
But Tarzana, nonetheless,
is home.
It's wonderful.
Yep.
After hearing their issues on homelessness, we decided to speak to a local councilman, Bob Blumenfield. He addressed some of those issues and what the city plans to do about them. He also spoke about the historic Orange Grove that's kind of come into the crosshairs of controversy. So we went to the little cafe. We asked people what their issues were. They love Tarzana, yeah, but they don't like the crime. They don't like the homelessness. They say it's grown a lot. And so what's your response to them about crime? That we talked to two people who had been violated, been broken into in their homes.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a difficult thing. And I could tell you the same thing. I was talking to the Woodland Hills Homeowners Association last night. I'm out almost every night of the week talking to constituents about the issues that they care about. And crime has always and is always, you know, top on the list. It is the biggest thing we deal with in, biggest part of our budget in the city. 70% of our discretionary money is going to public safety. That is always the top.
So now, what do you tell those people about crime? They want to hear somebody say, yeah, we're working on it.
Well, of course, we have great senior lead officers. You know, LAPD has changed over the last couple of decades and gotten much more efficient using things like Crime Stat. And when you actually look at the numbers, and I mean, Garcetti just did a big press conference about this recently, about how actually the crime numbers are down this year. Now, that doesn't translate to people feeling safer necessarily, and particularly when you have homelessness, and those two issues often get mixed together unfairly and fairly to some extent, whether people feel safe is a real issue.
What do you tell people about homelessness? There are a lot of propositions out there, a lot of tax money going toward this, and yet it seems like the problem is expanding.
The problem is expanding. It's expanding faster in counties outside of Los Angeles than Los Angeles. I mean, when you look at the numbers from the last homeless
count. But LA's got its share under every overpass.
Absolutely. It is the number one issue. And my mentioning the other cities does not in any way diminish the problem that we have here. You can go, the underpass is right in here. And I have fewer homeless people in my district than any other district in the city. And yet it is the number one issue for folks.
So what do you tell people you're doing about it?
I tell them a lot of things. I mean, and we are doing a lot of things. But you have to understand, too, that the problem is growing faster than the solutions. So, you know, we housed, in one shape or another, 21,000 people last year as a city. You know, that was about the number when this problem really started becoming an issue about 4 or 5 years ago. So, if it were 4 or 5 years ago, we would have housed everybody. But the problem is getting bigger. The underlying causes of homelessness are still very much out there. And we're chipping away at them, but we have to look at this not just about the city. We have to look at all of the forces that conspire to create this problem on the federal level, the state level, the county level, city level. And we need to do what we're doing in the city level, but we need to partner better also with all the other levels of government, because this is a massive problem. And it is getting worse, and part of it is the growing divide between the haves and the have-nots. Part of it is the drug epidemic, the opioid crisis, which has been contributing to this. It's the lack of mental health facilities.
Do you feel like you're getting a handle at all or even close?
We're doing some amazing things, and more people are being housed, and there's a lot in the works, and I could tell you about a few of them.
But are you getting a handle or are you getting even close?
It's not a fair question in the sense that we are doing more than has ever been done before. And LA is leading the way compared to other cities. And the results are, you know, we're growing at a slower speed. But that doesn't change the fact that we're growing and that homelessness is getting worse. Even if it's getting worse in a slower rate than somewhere else, that should not give anybody any solace. Because that still means that there is somebody under that underpass who is both in desperate need of help and who is causing a nuisance in the community.
So to the people we talked to at the little cafe, you say?
Well, I say come out to some of the meetings that we're talking about this issue, see how you can be helpful, join my community action team on homelessness, learn about the partnership we're creating with Providence Hospital and Tarzana Treatment Center dealing with the drug addiction, learn about the Bridge Home housing that's going up, that's going to house between 80 and 100 people on Canoga and Satakoi, right up the street, that will make a big difference. Learn about some of the federal court rulings recently that have made it a little bit more difficult, like the Boise case that I was hoping the Supreme Court would take up and give us a little bit more control over our street. Learn about some of the things that we are doing.
In other words, get involved.
Get involved, absolutely, and also understand what's going on and how you can help. I mean, there are a couple apps. You know, right now, in the palm of your hand, you can do something. If you see someone in desperate need, you can use LA-HOP. That's a website. You can have an app on your phone that'll link to it, and that allows you to engage a outreach worker that will be sent to that person. And we have outreach workers in the West Valley now. We actually have more because I opened up part of my district office so that we would have outreach workers based here, so they wouldn't have any travel time, that go out every day offering services to people. Or if you see an encampment and then you want to make sure that the city is alerted to it for cleanup, sanitation cleanup, use the MyLA 311 app and you can engage in that way. You can call my office. I mean, these are practical things that you can do and that people are doing in order to help engage. And getting involved with some of the local nonprofits to actually give a help up, not necessarily a handout, but a help up to get people out of the desperate situation that they're in. I go out regularly with the LASA workers too, so because I know the community very well and meetings every night, hearing the concerns, but I also go to those underpasses. I could tell you about some of the people who are causing the community concerns and tell you about, you know, without violating their privacy, some of the issues generically that they're facing and why some of them are there. It is a complex problem, and we need a comprehensive solution, both on the city level, but other levels as well.
First of all, you know Tarzana very well. Tell me what your feelings are about Tarzana.
It's a beautiful community. It's has a great history. Obviously, folks who know it, you know, it was named Edgar Rice Burroughs' character, Tarzan, just celebrated its 100th anniversary. As you can, you know, you look around here, that's mostly a bedroom community, a lot of homes. Some great restaurants and things on Ventura Boulevard, but it's a suburban portion of the city of Los Angeles.
This orange grove behind you, tell me about it.
So this is the last remaining orange grove in the city of Los Angeles.
The last remaining orange grove or the last remaining commercial orange grove?
Last remaining commercial orange grove, depending on how you define orange grove. But there's really, it is a time capsule. When you walk in the property, you're transported to another era. And you're transported to an era that used to be the entire San Fernando Valley. And it is a critical part of our history as a San Fernando Valley, where, you know, all of these areas before they became homes and different housing tracts was basically all, you know, working agriculture and working orange groves. And this is the last sliver of the last sliver of what was the Bothwell Ranch. You know, it was over 100 plus acres. And this is just the last little bit, and we're trying to figure out how we can preserve a slice of that history for the future and for generations to come.
What's on the table? What is it you're doing?
So there's a process in the city, and we can't, by the way, we cannot stop it from being developed. It is private property, and it most likely will be developed. We cannot force someone to keep it as an orange grove. I get that. But we can give it a historical designation. And what that means is if when they come to the city for different permits and trying to slice up the land into different lots for housing, that we'll have more leverage to require that some homage to the historical use would be preserved.
Part of the issue, though, here is the family that owns it. And they say, through their attorney I've talked to, they say that it's underwater. And not literally, but financially.
Sure.
And that just even paying for the water to keep these orange groves alive and well and healthy is not something they can even afford.
Yeah, that's part of the complication of it. That's part of why they want to sell it. I get that. That doesn't change the fact that when you walk out there, there is that history. You see the barn where they, you know, processed the oranges. You see the train tracks that they used inside there. That was, you know, part of this history. You talk to the neighbors, and you learn about what this means to the community. So that doesn't change any of that. Yes, that is their motivation, and that is the reason that they're selling it. And the city's historical designation will not stop them from selling it, and it will not stop it from being developed. But it may change what that nature of that development would be, and perhaps it will encourage them to strike some sort of a deal where we can preserve a portion of it and create some sort of public access and historical remembrance.
Well, let's say, for instance, they say they can't really afford the water bill because they're not making enough profit from the oranges. Can the city pay for the water bill?
Well, we don't have a fund to buy this property, to necessarily maintain it. Now, obviously, once you start getting down into the numbers of maintain, if there was a section of it and it was granted to the city to preserve, we'd probably be able to find the money to keep it going.
Is it fair to, it's almost like an eminent domain sort of thing. Is it fair to...
It's not eminent domain. We are not taking the property.
No, that I understand. But if you're putting restrictions on it, doesn't that make it harder for the owners to sell if they want to?
Historical monument status is not something new. It's done all the time on key pieces of architecture, key pieces of history, everything from the Bob Hope's old house to buildings that have historic significance. We as a society, as a community, have an interest and a duty to protect a bit of our history. And yes, that means that sometimes that changes the value of the land. It doesn't always make it lower. I mean, there's a lot of creative uses that you could probably come up with that could enhance the value of this land. It's just a question of how you capture it. And if the current owners only see that the only way they can capture value is by cutting it up and selling it as homes, that's the way they see it. But that doesn't mean it's the only way that the future of this property could continue.
I learned a lot about Tarzana this week, and I hope you did too. Thanks for joining us for another episode of What the How. All together now. Very good. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.